do you have a favorite song? I don't like ultimates like that. What is the one, what is your favorite movie? But to help you maybe find that favorite song, we have a game we play when we don't go on road trips as a family where we call it like rotating DJ. And so each person just picks a song. So I would pick a song and we'd listen to it. And then my wife would pick a song, we would listen to that one. And so like as it goes around, you can be able to think, okay, what's the next song I'm going to pick? What's the next song I'm going to pick? Do you have a favorite song? I've been closely attached to music my whole life. There's just something incredible about music. The volume, the instruments, all the different ingredients, the major keys, the minor keys, the sudden changes, those whispering moments and those deafening pinnacles, right? There's something about music that gives substance to the soul. We can hear our hurts and experience our exhilarations. One of the most interesting ingredients in a song, though, is the lyrics. Because lyrics bring specifics. If there's a moment where we're oohing and aahing in a song, we might ooh and ah along or clap and snap, but the lyrics kind of tell us why. What is really going on? Things like this. I see babies cry. And I watch them grow, and they'll learn much more than I'll never know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Elton John would say, it seems to me that sorry seems to be the hardest word. Carrie Underwood, maybe next time he'll think before he cheats. And I couldn't talk about songs or lyrics without at least once quoting Pearl Jam, one of my favorite bands. I've tasted a life wasted. I'm never going back again. If you were to write a song, what lyrics do you think you would come up with? Keith Richards said this about songwriting. He said, songwriting is a weird game. I never intended to become one. I fell into it by mistake. I can't get out of it. It fascinates me. I like to point out the rawer points of life. Gwen Stefani says, my songs are basically my diaries. Some of my best songwriting has come out of a time when I've been going through a personal nightmare. Neil Diamond, performing is the easiest part of what I do, and songwriting is the hardest. And Taylor Swift, and in her quote, this is kind of where I hope we go today, I think songwriting is the ultimate form of being able to make anything that happens in your life productive. David, one of the great characters in all of the Bible, he also was a songwriter. And if you're new with us this morning, we are in a sermon series that we're calling David Plus. We are streaming the life of Jesus, looking at it in close detail, episode by episode. And we're 15 weeks in now. So we've seen all kinds of ups and downs and background and crazy wins and awful losses and long waits and weird moments. And today, we're going to shift our focus away from the moments of his life and center it more on the man himself. We're going to examine the habit of David of writing psalms. In 2 Samuel 23, he is referred to as the sweet psalmist of Israel. He was a songwriter, a skilled instrumentalist, a gifted musician, and he penned some of the most incredibly honest and powerful stanzas that still speak today. Of course, these songs are found in the book of Psalms. In this book, there's no music notes or melodies, but instead there is a collection of 150 songs, their lyrics and their prayers. Some fast facts about the Psalms. Now, see, David didn't write them all. He is actually accredited with 73, and scholars can make arguments for as many as 85 to 88. I love this graphic. It's actually in a Bible that my wife gave me, where the different sizes of the circles are the different lengths of the Psalms, and then you can also see how they're broken up into all different kinds of categories. My favorite category would be these like charcoal ones right here, because they're called the imprecatory Psalms. And these are the ones where it's like, Lord, smash them. As a matter of fact, if you really want to stand out this winter, when it comes time to take your picture and put a verse on a Christmas card, I might suggest one of the imprecatory Psalms. Oh God, shatter the teeth in their mouths. We're going to look at David the psalmist this morning. And I want to challenge you to take on the task of psalm writing. We're going to highlight a space that the Bible invites us into to experience a richer closeness in our relationship with God and a stronger stance in our daily lives. And we're going to begin right where we left off last week in 2 Samuel 7. We're going to be hopping around a lot today in the Bible because we're going to be in the Psalms. We're not going to just read from one. We're going to read from several. I'll have most of the scriptures posted on the screens. 2 Samuel 7, though, if you wanted to open up there, you can join me there for a second, because we're going to kind of pinpoint and use this as a launching pad for our discussion this morning. We were here last week when Pastor Dean did the incredible job of walking us through what it looks like to hold our dreams and God's plan. And I want to say again, man, I am so thankful for these 6 weeks where Pastor Chuck and Jill get a chance to really get away and refuel and refresh and receive from the Lord. And we have the opportunity to hear from so many different voices, people that are after the God of heart, after the heart of God, and be a channel of his wisdom and word for us each week. So this has been a great time. Here's that passage, 2 Samuel 7, and it says this: when King David was settled in his palace and the Lord had given him the rest from all of his surrounding enemies, the king summoned Nathan the prophet. Look, David said, I'm living in a beautiful cedar palace, but the ark of God is out there in a tent. Nathan replied to the king, go ahead and do whatever you have in mind, for the Lord is with you. Again, we were right here last week. We talked about David's dream to build the temple and all those kinds of things. But what I want us to see here is I want us to see David's circumstance and God's presence. Okay, so in this particular verse, when King David was settled in his palace and the Lord had given him rest from all of his surrounding enemies, like that is the circumstance of David. And Nathan reminds him, the Lord is with you. So we see a circumstance of David in this season of life, and we see the constant presence of the Lord. His circumstance, God's presence. In verse 18, it says this: then King David went in and sat before the Lord and prayed. This is the constant habit of David the psalmist. He went in and he sat. He goes and situates himself in God's presence. The actual Hebrew word for sat there is yashav, which does mean like to sit, to remain, and to dwell. And we see this like all throughout David's life. We see him going and sitting when he's a shepherd boy out in the fields. We see it when he's a wanted man running and hiding in caves. And we even see it here and now when the Lord has given him rest from all of his surrounding enemies. This is the posture, the positioning, the leaning of David, the psalmist. We also see it in the life of Jesus. As a church family, we have a reading plan that you can find on our website and on bookmarks here in the seat backs throughout the sanctuary. You can also find it on our church app now as well. And for the last month, we've been in the book of Mark. Here's a couple of scriptures where we can see Jesus doing this very same thing. Mark 1:35, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Mark 6:46, after telling everyone goodbye, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Jesus consistently models this going and sitting in the presence of the Lord. And we see it throughout the Gospels. He even teaches on it in Matthew chapter 6. Check this out. He says, when you pray, go away by yourself, shut the door, and pray to your Father in private. Then your Father, who sees everything, will reward you. Okay, I want to draw you a picture. So we've been talking about the life of David. So let's say he's born. It's not very eventful. And then it kind of goes along. We have some wins and we have some losses. And we have some things and we have some that. And then, as you know, and there's like a long time where you're just like the same thing. It seems like nothing's going on, right? Like a plateau. And then we're back up and we're way back down again. Maybe this is Bathsheba. Who knows, right? And then there's this like, so here are all of the circumstances of David's life, right? Right now, we're like here, where God has given him rest from all of his surrounding enemies. Like that's where he is in this moment in life. Along with this, Nathan reminds him of like the constant presence of God in his life. Right? So just put a big old G-O-D. All right? And what we see here are these from Jesus and from David, are like these check-ins, right? Where they perhaps momentarily vacate their circumstance in life and connect with the presence of God. We can't run from our circumstances. Like there's no getting off of this roller coaster, right? We're kind of stuck here. And the Bible is so clear at reminding us that we actually can't get away from the Lord. David writes himself in Psalm 139, like, Lord, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? You're in the highest heavens. You're in the depths of the lowest pits. You're in the deeps of the darkest sea. You're there. Now, we can't ignore them. That is one thing that we can do. We can't ignore our circumstances. We can be like an ostrich with our head stuck in the ground. Or we can get to where like all we focus on is the ride of this roller coaster and we ignore God. What I hope we see this morning in the life of David, in the life of Jesus, is this consistent tapping into the presence of God. And that going out and that tapping in actually has a transformational and stabilizing impact on our souls as we ride the waves of circumstance. There's more for you in the presence of God than there is in the midst of your circumstances. I mean, regardless of circumstance, God is working, God is revealing, God is redeeming. And it seems like there's this competition between those two at all times, right? Like we're being pulled back and forth. Sometimes it's the weight of our circumstances, sometimes it's the wonderful glory of God, but it's this back and forth and back and forth. I can attest to you that the more intentional we are about dwelling in God's presence, the more available we are to receive from him. Like even right now, this moment, you are active in this. You've left your life. You've come and sat in these chairs, longing to experience and spend a moment with the Lord. So you're already doing the sermon. Congratulations. This is one iteration of what we're talking about this morning. It's one iteration of what we see in David's life and what we see in Jesus' life. But again, the more intentional you are, you can step away from your circumstances even when you're lying in bed at night and begin to pray to the Lord. You can go into your office or into a favorite chair in your living room. Maybe you can step out of your house and go on the back porch or take a walk around the park. But the more you go, the more available you are to hear from the Lord. I remember we went to Colorado just 2 weeks ago as a family for vacation, and we were out on these hiking trails near this relatively large, fast-flowing stream. I remember standing on the edges of that bank and just kind of looking around at all the majesty and mystery of nature, and my thought was, man, like, only God things happen here. And I was just caught up in wonder at how there was just so little distraction between me and the presence of God. What is so cool about the Psalms is that they give us a glimpse into these moments when David had them. And they give us a framework to follow when we step out and seek God for ourselves. So here's what I want us to do. I want us to look at three helpful steps that we see in psalm writing, and I want us to kind of own those steps ourselves today. The first step is this: declare the details of your circumstance. Like, let's get honest about what's going on in our lives. So when you find yourself in the presence of the Lord, like, begin with, God, here is what's going on. He knows it all, but it's helpful for us to begin to articulate these things. We see it in Psalm 51, where it says words like this: I recognize my rebellion. It haunts me day and night. I know I have sinned. Psalm 142, David says, man, I pour out my complaints before the Lord. I tell him all my troubles. And when I am overwhelmed, you alone know the way that you should turn. Wherever I go, Lord, my enemies have set traps for me. I look for someone to come and help me, but no one gives me a passing thought. No one can help me. No one cares a bit what happens to me. Psalm 116, is he says stuff like, death has wrapped its ropes around me. I'm deeply troubled. These people are all liars. Get honest. Maybe it's not bad. Maybe it's really good. One of the most famous psalms that there is Psalm 23, begins with these words: the Lord is my shepherd, and I lack nothing. Lord, thank you. I will say this, when you get in this moment and you get honest with the Lord, absolutely air your grievances, but make it a point as well to air your gratitude. If you're in the moment where you're like, man, I do not know, God, I do not know what I'm going to do with this situation at work, but I do know rent's covered. Thank you. I do not know how me and my spouse are going to get around this issue or circumstance, but I do know I have a partner, someone to stand with me and walk out what we can read in Ecclesiastes 4 about how two can stand back to back and conquer. Thank you, Lord. And kids, what am I going to, I mean, they just give us so many circumstances to get honest in the presence of the Lord. But they are a blessing. And so we say thank you. Declare the details of your circumstances. Get honest with God. And let me say, especially when this whole gratitude thing, one of my favorite statements on gratitude is this: like, it's hard for stress and gratitude to coexist. So if things do get hard and your heart does get heavy, get honest with the Lord. Get into his presence and begin to thank him. Number two, magnify the majesty of God. This is the next step. And again, pervasive in the Psalms. This is where we really just sit in the greatness of God, the splendor of God, the quality of his character. Listen to Psalm chapter 8. God, when I consider the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place. O Lord, how majestic is your name. Psalm 145, great is the Lord. He is most worthy of praise. No one can measure his greatness. Lord, I will meditate on your majestic and glorious splendor. I will meditate on your wonderful miracles, your awe-inspiring deeds. I will proclaim your greatness. Everyone will share the story of your wonderful goodness. You are merciful and compassionate. You are slow to get angry. You're filled with unfailing love. You're good to everyone. You shower compassion on all that you have made. And on and on. But begin to really sit and situate ourselves in the goodness and majesty of God. See, this is where we do the important work of proclaiming the truth of God. Because in that first situation, in that first theme, when we're getting honest, we might say things like, Lord, how long? How long do I have to wait? Are you there? Are you hearing me? David expresses all of those sentiments in the Psalms. But in step two here, we have the opportunity, if not, I would say the obligation, to remind ourselves that God has perfect timing. That God does care. God is able, and he does great things. Like Psalm 55, where David says, I will call on the Lord, and the Lord will rescue me. Morning, noon, and night, I cry out in my distress, and the Lord hears me. Proclaim the truth of God. Number three, invite the Lord to intervene. I'm actually going to start in John chapter 17 for this one and read the prayer of Jesus. This is towards the end of the book of John. And in the 17th chapter, there's a very long prayer where Jesus is speaking to the Lord. And I just want to highlight all of the different points where he invites God to intervene. Again, this is the prayer of our King Jesus. Father, bring me into the glory we shared before the world began. Father, now protect them, my disciples. Protect them by the power of your name so that they will be united just as we are. I'm not asking that you take them out of the world, but keep them safe from the evil one. Isn't this beautiful? Make them holy by your truth. Teach them your word, which is truth. I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one, as you are in me, Father, and I am in you, and may they be in us so that the world will believe that you sent me. May they experience such perfect unity that the world will know that you sent me and that you love them as much as you love me. Father, I want these whom you have given me to be with me where I am. Invite him to intervene. We also see it in Matthew 6 where Jesus teaches us how to pray. There's so many different opportunities. Let's see. Matthew 6. There it is. Lord, let your kingdom come. Let your will be done. Give us today the food that we need. Forgive us our sins. Do not let us go into temptation. Again, requesting and inviting. Let's look at Psalm 143. In fact, in Psalm 143, it's a great snapshot of all three. Remember the first part. The first part is to confess, to declare the realities of your life. So David begins in Psalm 143. He says, my enemy has chased me. My enemy has knocked me to the ground and forces me to live in darkness like those in the grave. He says, I'm losing all hope. I'm paralyzed with fear. I remember the days of old. And then he says this, part two, right? Proclaim the greatness of God. I ponder all of your great works. I think about what you have done, and then I lift my hands to you in prayer, and I thirst for you as a land thirsts for rain. And then he steps into number three, where he invites God in. Come quickly, Lord. Answer me. My depression deepens, so don't turn away from me. Let me hear of your unfailing love each morning. Show me where to walk. Rescue me from my enemies. Teach me to do your will. May your gracious spirit lead me forward. Preserve my life. bring me out of this distress, silence all of my enemies, and destroy all of my foes. Declare the details of your circumstance. Magnify the majesty of God, and then invite him in. Whenever we invite God into anything, you're going to make it better. Because you're not just like asking that he be a genie. I mean, you are asking, you are yielding to his wisdom, power, and trusting his ways. I want to close up these three steps with this thought. Desire God more than a specific outcome. Because I'm here to tell you that a deepening relationship with Jesus Christ is better than just getting what you want. We see it in Matthew 26 when Jesus is in the garden. He tells his disciples first, like, I am heavy with sorrow. And then he goes and he prays and he lets the Lord know, like, man, this is the details of my situation. And he invites him to intervene. Like, I would love for this cup to pass from me. But not what I will, what you will. This desire for the Lord. And then, like, in 2 Samuel chapter 12, this is right after the whole Bathsheba incident where David sees a woman who is another man's wife, and he takes her for his own. They end up having a kid, and he ends up killing the husband, and it's really weird and goofy. And the Lord sends a prophet to say, like, you did a bad thing. And David says, I know, I sinned. And the prophet says, like, you're going to lose the child. And it says, this is, again, 2 Samuel chapter 12. David goes and still prays that God would save the child. Like, he asks earnestly. He doesn't eat. He just sits on the ground and prays that God would save the child. The illness takes the child in death. And when that happens, David's servants are actually very nervous about even telling him, like, oh man, what's he going to do? He's going to be... But he sees the concern on their face. He hears their whispers and he goes, is the child dead? And they say, yes, that he is. It says that he gets up, he goes and he washes himself, he anoints himself with oil, and he goes to worship the Lord. In both of those instances, we see this desiring God more than desiring an outcome. Are y'all ready? What if the circumstances in our lives what if they're not ups and downs? And what if God isn't like distant and separate from our circumstances, but rather in the midst of all of them? And so the seeming ups and downs of life are actually lefts and rights that expose us to more of him. And so when we see David the psalmist, and we see Jesus our King going to the presence of the Lord, it's not a dip, it's an outstretching and a desire to gather more of him as they go through life. This is what we see in the Psalms, and this is what is available to us when we obey Jesus and get out and pray. Declare the details of our circumstances, but man, magnify the majesty of God and invite him in. Instead of like teetering on the circumstances of our life and hoping we don't fall, what this is just going, getting off the tightrope and standing on firm ground and saying, Lord, I want all of you. I want all of you. One of my favorite songs is by a guy by the name of Walt Wilkins. country singer, country songwriter. He has this one song called Someone Somewhere Tonight. And what's beautiful about the song, in my estimation, is that it actually really encapsulates exactly what we've talked about this morning. The circumstances of life and the constant presence of God's love and the request for it. Now, for him, it's a love song, but track with me. Someone somewhere tonight is taking their first steps. They're letting go of the hands that held them, and they're trusting themselves. While someone somewhere tonight is hearing their last rites, and they're hoping with all their might that there's something else. Someone somewhere tonight is tasting their first kiss and whispering softly this wish that the night would go on. While someone somewhere tonight is holding on to a bottle and praying that God will get them through to the dawn. The chorus says this, "Baby, lie down here beside me and let's lie real still and tell me you love me and that you always will." Isn't that a beautiful song? There's all these circumstances in life, but there's this constant of love. There's this constant presence that's making much of our lives. As we close this morning, and I don't know what you faced this past week. I don't know what's ahead of you in the days to come. I don't know what's facing you right now. I don't know what you're thinking about in your head as we begin to wrap up. But what I do know is that whatever it is, it's circumstantial. It's momentary. Whether it's exciting or scary, it will only be this way for a season, and it won't last forever. I also know that the God of all creation is with you. That he never shifts or wavers. He never slumbers or sleeps. His love is unfailing. His mercies are new this morning and every morning, and his grace is sufficient. He has a plan and a purpose for your life. He knows how to make the most of your moments, and he knows how to give all of himself to you. So let's take a step from David the psalmist, from Jesus our King, and let's seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness and trust that all of these things will be added unto us. I want to give you two action steps to walk this out this week so we can walk this way. Number one, man, schedule a time and a place to sit in his presence. And one, like, pat yourself on the back because you already did it. Like, we're here right now. And every time you get back in here right now, I don't know, it ain't just church. I mean, this is a moment in the presence of God where we are retreating, stealing away, and gathering from him. But I would also encourage you, man, take a new step and grow in your pursuit of God. So if you've never stepped out before, taken a walk and been in a prayer, or had a comfy chair to read your Bible in, then I would encourage you, schedule that this week. Set the time, set the place, and go meet with the Lord. And before you even take on the daunting task of writing a psalm, man, just read the Psalms. Maybe you have a habit of doing this. Well, then add something new. Stretch out your arms a little wider as we gather God. So if you have a place to go and pray, then maybe go to a new place. If you already read and pray but you don't journal, man, journal. Start writing some of these things down. If you do journal, why not write a psalm? Declare the details. Magnify the goodness of God and invite him in. Get poetic. May our goal be to gather more of God in every circumstance that we're blessed to walk in.